remember the okay, we will use our copy so long, and then when everything is sorted out, we will leave. If then we are all comfortable in welcoming everybody and the leadership of the Council for Medical Skin, you are here today in front of us for a number of reasons. Well, one, because it's to table your APP and the strike plan. And it's just not about doing that. I think you are aware that entities of any sector, now we talk about the health sector, is to empower us as legislators to, when we conduct our oversight, we are empowered, because we have come to a realization and a view that when we are conducting our oversight, there is an area where we don't conduct that. It only depends. We respond and think on the basis of what is in the document. So we must balance presentation with the eye contact, with the visit to the entities. So I just want you, so that I don't forget this when I'm leaving before you leave, that we will be visiting your offices. We will be at a certain point call the entire board friend of us. We will have those. This process does not give us enough time to zoom into key areas. So there will be a time, Chair, where we'll say, we'll request you to come in front of us to take us through on what is happening in a particular area or in a particular medical scheme. So we want you to be live to that fact that now, that's what we are going beyond, just asking questions and getting responses, and it is the end. You only come once in a quarter, I'm making an example. So oversight is about, it's broader. Within that, we must take it to the next level. We will again zoom into some of the areas that we requested you to address the last time that we met. So we think that just the opening remarks is that it must be at the back of your mind that it's not going to be business as usual. It's going to be business unusual, because I don't think in this term, from 2014, we have never thought about visiting entities. Now we are going to physically visiting entities. All of them have told them that towards as we are raising that, because we think that entities of the Department of Health that falls under the Department of Health that are being either supervised by the Department of Health in this whole new world game in terms of the health services in our country within the context of the National Health Insurance, entities have got a role. It may be minimal, it may not be there, it may whatever, but we do think that as we are moving forward, we must take everybody on board. So it's not just in this term, it's not just about coming in front of the committee and it ends there, but it's about how do we ensure that all of us in the areas where we are deployed or where we are working, we ensure that we change the social conditions of our people, and we have got, all have got a responsibility. Whether you are in the private sector, whether you are in the public sector, whether you are independent, to us it's about how then do we all come together and ensure with all the expertise and the experiences we share. So we thought that, Chair, we must put that up front because we are in that space. Having said that, we will then start with the introductions, that it was just welcoming, and our apologies for not keeping with time, but we gave you time to relax, because I saw everybody came rushing. So just to lower your as we have said, we will continue even if she is still busy. My name is Lindelwa Dundwa. I'm the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Health. Next to me is Ms. Machalamba, who is the head of the secretariat of the committee in the sector. Right across opposite me is Ms. Gumane, she's our contact advisor. Her name is Ndobuhle. Next to her is Zube, who is our researcher. I'm missing two people, but when they come, we'll introduce. We've also been joined by the Department of Health, led by Dr. Pile, who is then going to see how they do the introduction. And we've got guests. Everybody who is here will introduce herself or himself. And then after the introduction, we'll then hand over to you on how you will table your presentation. It depends on you. I will then hand over to honorable members. But before that, house rules, phones are on silent. Everybody speak through the mic. Only members that are allowed to ask questions. Is the presenters that are allowed to respond, and on how then they make that responses, those responses will depend on who respond on what. We're not going to be prescriptive on that, but only that it is only members of the portfolio committee that are allowed to ask questions. Over to you, honorable members, for the introduction.
My name is Nonsan Tanto Lindara, a member of the Portfolio Committee.
Good afternoon, San Bonani. My name is Heinrich Vomink. I'm a member of the committee.
Avshene Loisa Malankosa, member of the committee.
Good afternoon, everyone. I've been playing on the DDG Health Regulation Compliance.
Good afternoon, honorable members. Moreno Nkosi, of the National Department of Health.
Good afternoon, members. My name is Nkosi Mshwana from the Department of Health.
Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Faridas Kosaba, Minister of Health.
Good afternoon, honorable members. My name is Cindy Lesondaza from the National Department of Health.
Good afternoon, Chair Frank Makua, Minister of Health.
Good afternoon, my name is Baba Lekuma from the Parliamentary Monitoring Group.
Over to you, Chair, for the
introduction. Good afternoon, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members of the Portfolio Committee. I thought I could introduce my colleagues on the Council, or they introduce themselves. I've got on my right is Dr. Alkabi Kondradi. She's our stakeholder relations officer. She's also a senior manager. And on my left here is Mr. Dan Lahutjo, who's been the acting CEO as well as our Chief Financial Officer. And next to him is Ms. Diboko Maizia, who is in fact involved with financial affairs in our council. Then we have Ms. Tembi Baswana, who handles complaints. Next to Ms. Baswana is Mr. Craig Burton Durham, who in fact is involved in legal matters, and they will in fact, each of these will get input in the areas that they have expertise. And over there is Dr. Anton de Villiers, who is involved in presenting on trends in utilization of the various projects.
I'm sympathized by the secretariat that the two gentlemen behind you are guests. I thought that they are part of it. So they will introduce themselves and tell us it's not only about your names, but where, which institution or company you are coming from.
Good afternoon, Chairperson and members of the Portfolio Committee on Health. My name is Humphrey Zokufa. I'm the Managing Director of the Board of Healthcare Funders of Southern Africa, abbreviated as BHF.
Good afternoon and thank you, Chair. I'm Clarence Meany, I'm the Chairperson of the Board of Healthcare Funders.
All right. We will then hand over to you, Chair, for the presentation. Let me just say, unfortunately, committee rooms don't have interpretation facilities, and the honorable members are saying that Dr. Maisel is a member of the committee, so that you don't feel that you are speaking the language that you don't understand. But we've got 11 official languages. Just loosening everybody up, please. He was trying to make us to be a session after lunch. It's quite a very boring session, but I don't think it will be. I just wanted to say that we don't have any interpretation. Unfortunately, it's only that time that he's speaking vernacular. For the rest of the presentation, he's going to ask questions in English. Don't worry, I'm here to protect you. Thank you very much. Over to you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. I think I must just mention to you that we are delighted that you would be going beyond these portfolio meetings to come and visit us. And you are welcome, and we would gladly have you there. And you would be able to see the whole functional environment wherein we, in fact, operate. So you are welcome, and we will definitely entertain you. I think before we start off with the presentation, I'd just like to make a couple of comments, if you would allow me to do so. I think that I should start off by saying that we as a regulatory entity, we face many challenges. And noteworthy in this regard is our regulatory responsibility over all the 83 medical schemes, which have an income around 150 billion rand. And we regulate them with the money that we get in annually of about 150 billion rand. And our prime responsibility is to do our best to improve as well as act in the best interest of all the members of the scheme. Members, they own the schemes, and we have to act in their interest. And at times, because of the regulatory responsibility, we are subject to court action. And it comes out that it is equivalent to virtually a David and Goliath sort of type of thing, where 150 million have to try to come out and regulate an industry of 150 million. So it's 120 million versus 150 billion. I think that some of the litigation issues and that are occurring, my colleague, Mr. Craig Burton Durham, from our Legal Affairs Department, will provide information in that regard. Now, the other sort of issue that we, and you mentioned that to you previously, are the amendments that we, to the Act that we submitted around about 2012. And that is, there has been progress, but these have not been finalized yet. I believe that they have, they've got to a reasonable state of the processing. The other important, I think, challenge is that we've got a rise in healthcare costs. It's a progressive rise in healthcare costs, and this also will be shown. What is disturbing about this rising cost is that we could get to a stage where healthcare in the private sector could be unaffordable. That's a big concern. But also, and looking at our beneficiaries, our members of various schemes, I think there are at least two schemes that I've come across that have increased their contributions, and the percentage increase is in a double digit sort of area. So it just shows that the healthcare, even if within the private sector, even for members, can become problematic. One of the major issues, and I think this is what's facing us now, is the national health insurance and the increasing or the universal access to healthcare. I think this is a major challenge to us too. And our challenge is how do we participate in the process to the extent that we fulfill the statutory requirements is that we should be in line with the national department policies, as well as, in fact, helping in the implementation of the process. There are various sort of areas we've already got involved in. Firstly, we did respond to the white paper on the NHI. But also we have a significant amount of expertise, and we have, in fact, identified areas where the various expertise can be used with the six streams that are vital towards the implementation of the National Health Insurance. So we are there. My big, again, concern is that in a setup where there is disparity between the public sector in terms of the type of services that are being given and the type of services that are available in the private sector, how do we, as the Council for Medical Schemes, bring about or mediate where these services which may be lacking in the public sector, how can we get those services also to be available to all? And we really need to think laterally to be able to do so. Now, over the past 18 months, we had an acting registrar providing leadership to the Council for Medical Schemes. And the acting registrar, Daniel Lehucho, has done a tremendous job. The Council for Medical Schemes has been operative. It functioned, I believe, optimally. There were many challenges, but somehow or other, we overcame those challenges. And I am, in fact, as chairperson of the council, grateful, and I'd like to be recorded, to Mr. Daniel Lehucho for this effort that he's put in, besides being the chief financial officer. And then I would also like to point out that we've been now through a very vigorous process of appointing the new registrar. We have, in fact, gone through the process, and the new registrar will be commencing on the 1st of November. Finally, and I think I should put this across, this is a positive note from our side, that the Auditor General's report, in fact, on the audit, or he, she, provided us with an audit that was clean and unqualified. It was an unqualified audit. And we are, in fact, quite pleased by that. I will now, if you allow me, or you allow us, to hand over to the acting registrar, Mr. Leucho, to make his presentation.
Before that, we have been joined by a lady and a gentleman. I would humbly request that they introduce themselves using the mic so that we are aware who is with us in this presentation. Over to you.
I'm Nelly from the Burgers. Yes, Father.
Nelly, ma'am, can you tell us your name and
Nelly Brandt Jonker.
Okay. All right.
Morgan Bear, Wire Services.
Thank you very much. The gentleman that is coming in is Moses Mwabe, who is the part of the research team of the secretariat of the committee. We'll then hand over to us.
Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. Outline of our presentation is that we are going to give a presentation of annual performance in the context of our strategic planning document. We also are going to be highlighting our financial position at the end of March 2016, and also we'll give you an industry report in terms of our annual report. And this industry report will be presented by my colleagues in the different sections. The financial position of the industry, the utilization, and important legal matters that you've gone through with the financial year, as well as the complaints analysis that you have gone through in the financial year. Just in terms of our annual performance information, we've got four strategic goals in the council. The first one being access to good quality healthcare cover being maximized. And we do that in terms of various aspects of open enrollment, provision of the necessary PMBs, and also the community rating aspect of our legislation. It's a very small. The second goal, strategic goal we have is that medical aid schemes are properly governed, and the related organization that we regulate in the industry. Medical schemes are properly governed and are responsive to the environment, and beneficiaries are protected. This is an important goal because we need to, at all times in the work that we do, to be mindful of the protection of the beneficiaries of all the medical schemes in the country. The third strategic goal is that CMS needs to be responsive to the needs of the environment and is an effective and efficient organization. This strategic goal talks to our own strengths and weaknesses as an entity, looking into our own human resource requirements, looking into our financial management systems, also looking into our IT systems that we have. The last goal is that CMS provides influential strategic advice and support to the development and implementation of strategic health policy. And in this regard, emphasis has already been made that we're making contribution to the National Health Insurance Development Process. Now, just in terms of our organogram, as
as you can see, the position of the registrar has been vacant for some months now, and lately the appointment has been made. Dr. Sokuba will be joining us. I'm sorry I mentioned it. But I think his side will be joining us from the 1st of November. And we got about, in terms of the hierarchy, about 13 business units reporting to the registrar or the CEO. Just in terms of these budget programs, we've got about 13 business units, the first one being administration, consisting of the office of the registrar, the office of the CFO, information and technology, as well as human resources. The other core programs include strategy office, accreditation, research and monitoring, stakeholder relations, compliance and investigation, benefit management unit, the legal services unit, the financial supervision, as well as the complaints adjudication unit. Just in terms of our performance for the financial year ending 31st of March, in terms of the strategic...
Sorry for that. I should have indicated my apologies. I'm assuming that members may are having a copy that is correct. You say that that copy, my copy, hasn't got programs. It hasn't got 5, 6, 7. So if honorable members have got the same copy like mine, my apologies. The secretary is correcting that. You then have to concentrate in the. And the light, I don't know what is happening in this room today. I hope it's not going to affect anybody's eyesight, because some of us are aging, easily irritated by Dr. Fomic. Sorry,
Dr. Chairperson, it feels like we're in a nightclub here.
Dr. Michael, please. The copies are coming, they are going to be corrected. So these, if you find out that it has got another, instead of 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, it's 2, 4, 5, don't worry. The copies are concentrated on the presentation, which is on the screen.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I've just indicated that in terms of our performance, in line with our strategic objectives, we have achieved about 85% of our objectives in terms of the indicators that we outlined for the financial year 2016. This is acceptable in terms of the audit, in terms of the audit standards of the Auditor General. We've been given an unqualified risk document also on our performance information. The deviations that we had is only about 15%. In fact, in the administration aspects of our business units. The first one being that one in terms of our budget. In terms of our indicator, we should have received a budget approval before the 31st of March 2016, but that did not happen. We only have received that budget approval somewhere in May. So as a result of our indicators, so that would have been a deviation, but that is well beyond our control, because as you are aware, our budget is approved by both the Minister of Health in concurrence with the National Treasurer. The second deviation was in respect of the advertisement or the recruitment process. We have not met the number of days that we have targeted in terms of filling in the vacancy. I will outline that as I go through the human resource unit. In some instances, our target is saying we'll fill the position in about 90 days, and we have gone beyond that. There are a number of reasons why that had happened. And also, we had targeted that the staff turnover rate must be about 5%, but in actual fact, in this year, the staff turnover rate was about 9%, so that was a deviation as well. And the last deviation, it was in terms of our input to the National Health Insurance policy of government. We're not able to make any meaningful contribution before the end of the financial, because the white paper was only publicized or released in December 2015. I think subsequent to that, we had already made our submissions in terms of the stakeholder invitation that was issued by the Department of Health. Just in terms of each program, the first program being the Office of the Registrar, the strategic objective of the registrar is that it must provide leadership to the entire organization and effective regulation of the industry. As I've indicated, because the registrar is responsible for the entire organization, 85% of the objectives that were achieved are attributed to the Office of the Registrar, and those 15% as I've outlined, one in the Office of the of the CFO, three in the Human Resource Division, and one in the Strategic Office. Those were the responsible for that 15% deviation. In the CFO's office, as we have indicated, one of the major objectives is that you must receive an unqualified audit opinion from the Auditor General in terms of our own financial statements. As the chairperson has already indicated, we have received an unqualified audit opinion, a clean one. This year, there was no matter of emphasis. The other objective is risk management. In terms of risk management process, we need to present risk registers to every sitting of council. We have achieved that. We have presented the four risk registers to the quarterly meetings of council. And in terms of the planning and budgeting, as I've indicated, in terms of our objective, we need to receive the approval of our budget by the 31st of May. That did not happen. We only received that approval by the 23rd of May. And I think we've indicated that this is beyond us because we rely on the processes of the Department of Health in concurrence with the Department of Finance. The last objective in terms of the planning process is our performance information. We have submitted our performance information by the required statutory date of the 31st July, and we have also received an unqualified audit opinion in that regard. The second sub-program is human resource management, ICT, that is our information technology and management. We have overachieved in terms of the targets that we set ourselves. We said we'll receive a percentage of network and uptime for about 93%. We've overdone ourselves. We've achieved 99.5%, 6.5 positive achievement. The green marks there represent a positive achievement. If you look at software development objective, our target was a 99% achievement. We've achieved about 99.9%, almost 100%. There was no issues around our software development aspect in the organization. In relation to knowledge and resource management, our target was about 350 responses, estimated responses, but we have only achieved about 264. This was estimated figures, but we've attended to all the inquiries that were made in terms of the knowledge management processes. Human resource management, as I've indicated, our target was that in terms of staff turnover rate, we put a target of about 5%, but in actual fact, what has happened is that 9% of staff members have actually left the organization, and there were a number of reasons there. There were a lot of some labor relations matters, others were non-performance, and of course, career advancement, as it normally happens in organizations. The next deviation in terms of human resource management was in terms of the recruitment process. As I've indicated, it sometimes takes us a number of days to fill in vacancies. Like a senior strategist position, it was vacant for a good number of days. Our target is that in 90 days' time, we should be able to fill in vacancies. But this position took us quite a lot of time, almost a year, because I think at some point we had offered a position to a person but declined and has to go through the reassessment process as well. And in other positions as well, in the medical advisor position, at the time of this report, this position was not filled. We are over 120 days, but it was filled after the financial year. The senior programmer as well, and the health economist, as you can see, the narrative says is that the recruitment process for this vacancy is still underway. That is at the time when this financial, at the time of the 31st of May. But this, most of these positions have now been filled. The health economist has started, I think, in July. The senior manager in clinical also was appointed. IT developer was also appointed. And the senior legal adjudication officer was just started after the financial year. In the strategy office, the strategy office is responsible for the monitoring of our prescribed minimum benefits. They've issued about 12 scripts as the target. They've achieved that. And provision of clinical opinions to the complaints resolution process. Our target was about 1,472. We've only managed about 938. And there are various reasons. There were a number of staff shortages, there were a number of challenges during the year. The unit was not fully capacitated, the strategy office. And the third objective in this business unit is support of universal access through the recommendations to the National Health Insurance. As I've indicated, at the time, at the point of the 31st of May, we have not made any input because we're still busy with the interaction of the national white paper as it was just released in December, but subsequent to that we've made input to the national health insurance process as required by the Minister of Health. The third program, which is a core program, is accreditation, which deals with the accreditation of broker organization and broker individuals. The target was planned was to register accredit about 5,192. We've overachieved that. We've accredited about 5,600, 442 more than our targeted more than our target. In terms of the managed care entities, this one is easy to do because in each year we know how many entities will be visited and evaluated in terms of on-site evaluation. We had a target of about 15 and that was achieved. Administer a self-administered scheme, we had a target of 13 and the actual achievement was 12. One administrator was not accredited by council due to a number of factors, and that will come out as we discussed. That was Strata administration company. In the research and monitoring, this unit is responsible for a research project in the entity, and in terms of their objectives, one of the objectives is to monitor compliance with Regulation 5 as it relates to the practice code number system. And in terms of the target, we have received, we have received all the reports in relation to the practice code number system. This service is being rendered by the Board of Healthcare Funders. Our responsibility is to appoint an entity that administers this practice code number system and therefore have to monitor the management of that through submission of quarterly reports by this entity to the DHS. The next objective is to conduct research so that we can inform appropriate policy interventions. We had a target of 8 research projects. We have achieved 10. Two more than what we have targeted. The last objective in this regard is to monitor trends to improve regulatory policy and practice. This is done by way of submitting non-financial information to for inclusion in our annual report. And this is exactly what we shall be presenting to you this year. That has been achieved with regard to our publication of annual report. The stakeholder relation is to improve the awareness and training of our entity. The awareness has always been an issue given the portfolio committee. We've made a number of strides in this regard. In terms of our target, we've targeted about 18 sessions. We've managed to have 46 training sessions and awareness sessions. So we are making good progress in this regard. The concern has always been that we're not visiting rural areas, and I think we did submit a report to show that indeed we're visiting, we're trying to reach out to these rural areas so that people and beneficiaries are aware of the work that we do as the Council of Americas. The next objective in the stakeholder relation is communication and engagement with stakeholders. We do that by way of the publication of annual report. We've just released our annual report, as you're aware, we're presenting, and that will be popularizing the results of this annual report to our industry so that you engage in the industry in terms of the status of the industry and the concerns that the industry may have, so that we can go back and improve on our engagement with the industry. Stakeholder management, this is to measure the reputation of our entity as regards the work that we do. We've targeted about 75%, we've achieved about 94%, and I think gradually we see that our image and reputation is improving in the eyes of the industry and the community. In terms of compliance, this unit deals with the investigation of non-compliance with the medical aid scheme. And in terms of the enforcement interventions that we targeted about 45, and we've achieved about 82, 37 more than what we had targeted for. In terms of other number of governance interventions, we've targeted about 72, but we've only had about 55 governance interventions that we needed to attend to. And that, as you can see, is lower than what we had targeted, but that does not necessarily mean an underachievement, because that is what has come to the fore, and we have attended all the governance interventions that we need to be undertaken. Legal services, deals with benefit management. The benefit management unit is the unit that's responsible for the scheme's rules. The scheme's rules are very, very important, because that forms the basis of the contract between a member and the scheme. So they come to us for amendments and scrutiny. We have targeted to receive about 212 rule amendments. We have received and attended to about 222, 10 more than what we had targeted for. So indeed, we've achieved what we intended to achieve. The legal services unit, as we have indicated, is responsible for provision of legal advisory services for the effective regulation of industry and the management of the office. In terms of the target, they've targeted about 100 verbal and written legal opinions. We have attended to about 205. As we are saying, the legal services is just unpredictable. So you never know at any point in time how many legal requirements you'll be able to, you will be faced with. So we just provide estimates, but as the legal challenges do come, we attend to all of them. And as you can see, we've achieved more than we had targeted. The number of court and tribunal appearances in the legal matters that we handled, we had targeted about 20. We've achieved 21, one more than what we had targeted. Financial supervision is responsible. responsible for the supervision of the financial position of the industry. They do that by way of, for example, monitoring and promote financial soundness in military schemes. We do that by way of Regulation 29, which deals with the solvency levels of schemes. Of all the schemes that we attended to that submitted business plans, we've attended to the 100% what we achieved. The second objective is also to recommend recommendations on action plans for the scheme with rapidly reducing solvency, but above the statutory minimum for the 100% of the schemes that we attended to. I think I've also indicated that we've achieved that 100%. We monitor financial soundness by way of monitoring the quarterly financial information of schemes. They've submitted all the quarterly reports. As you can see, we're seeing three there because the fourth quarter is the annual financial report that they submit. And we do that analysis in terms of consolidating that by way of putting it in our annual report, which is the next objective, is the number of financial sections prepared for the annual report that was also achieved. Complaints adjudication, we receive about, I think in terms of accuracy, about 2,000 complaints. 73%, we've targeted to resolve 73% of our complaints, but in actual performance, we performed far more than what we've targeted, 75% of the 2% more than we had achieved. I think we've indicated that with the senior manager complaints, we'll be giving us a complaint plan for this financial year. That relates to our indicators and our performance information, Honorable Chair. I'm now going to be dealing with our outcome of the financial statements for the financial year 2016. As we have indicated, in terms of our annual financial statements, we were able to submit our financial statements to the Auditor General by the 31st of May. This is a statutory requirement. And even after the submission of the 31st May, there were no material adjustments. And in this regard, we are also saying that we have received an unqualified audit opinion for the financial year ending 31st March 2016. I must also indicate that we have not incurred any irregular expenditure in this regard. The irregular expenditure that is contained here is for the previous financial year, and we will explain that as we come to it. Just in terms of the statement of financial position, which is your balance sheet, our current assets and our non-current assets with a total of about 50 million. Part of that is that cash and cash, so we have about a cash position of about 24.6 million. This is an important aspect because if you look at the liabilities in the other sections, we've got liabilities of about 13 million. So in actual fact, we do not have enough cash at the end of the financial year because part of that cash amount needed to meet the liabilities in the section of our balance sheet. This is just a graphic pie chart representation of our assets, receivable from exchange transactions, cash and cash equivalents of our property, plant and equipment, and our intangible assets. Receivable from exchange transactions in the main is our levies, the levies that we receive from medical entities, which constitute a larger part of our income for operations. The liability section of our balance sheet, as I've indicated, note number 7, the current liabilities of about 13.8. If you match that with the cash that we have at the end of the financial year, we just do not have enough money to see our operations to current liability, operating this liability, just this is just a disclosure requirement in terms of the office rental space that we have in the council. We've indicated that the office space that we are occupying is on a rental basis. We are renting that office space. And I know that we've been asked the question as to why we've not, we'll be able to give answer to that. We've started with the process of purchasing this building. We're still in negotiation with the landlord, with the National Treasury, because it's quite the cheapest process as well. That is a pie chart representation of the liability section of our balance sheet. Just in terms of the statement of financial performance, which is a former income statement, the revenue, as we've indicated, our major revenue is the levies from medical listings, medical listings. We have collected about 120 this financial, almost 130 million. As Prof has indicated, we regulate an industry that collects about 140-150 billion, but we are only have a collecting from them in terms of levies about 130 million. Prof has already compared, he used a biblical reference of David and Goliath in that, and I may not emphasize that. Our revenue is made up of our accreditation of our brokers, administrators, and managed care entities. We also have received a government grant, which this year was a conditional grant. As you can see, in the previous financial year, it was about 4.7. Now we only have utilized about 300,000. The other part of the unspent grant is in our liabilities, because that would be an income receipting grant, which needs to carry out certain programs that the department would assign to us. We've recovered legal fees to the tune of about 1.5 million. Last year, we just about 1.1 million. The levy income, as I've indicated, our major source of income is about 150 million. The other income being the mandatory grant and our standard income, the total income being 129 million. This is just to show the revenue over the years, just in terms of the levies over the years. In 2012, as you can see, we moved from just close to 90 million to about 130 million in the five years. So our percentage increase in terms of levies, we always are guided by what we can get from National Treasury by way of approval. In terms of the other income, the main income here is the interest we receive. In terms of how we manage our finance, as we receive money, we deposit this money with the Reserve Bank as a requirement in terms of the Public Finance Management Act, and we receive interest. I think we're doing very well. As you can see, in 2015, we have received about 2.2 million. This year, in 2016, it was about 2.8 million. On non-exchange transactions, that is the grant that I referred to. That is the grant that we have been receiving from the National Department of Health. From 2012, we have received about 4.2 million, and I think they cut that grant this financial as we progress. We have only utilized about 165. The other money must be conditional, and it's going to be utilized for other projects that the department is assigned to us. Our administrative expenses and our auditing fees, operating expenses, the staff costs. Staff costs, I just want to give a pictorial presentation, is that it represents about 65% of our expenditure. As we have indicated, we are a service entity. We employ a number of good number of expertise from lawyers, doctors, accountants, actuaries, management accountants. So the main major part of our spend is support, like any other service industry, which represents about 65% of our expenditure. Administrative expenses, I've already alluded to the fact that we are renting the office space, which is a large part of our expenses, telecommunication expenses, building expenses, and security, as well as some other operating expenses related to the building. Operating expenses, we're talking about legal services, legal fees, consulting fees, travel, media and promotion, council members' fees. Our council members' fees are regulated in terms of treasury regulation using treasury rates and other expenses, as well as the sector. Just in terms of this aspect, the irregular expenditure, as I've indicated, we have not incurred any irregular expenditure this year. The irregular expenditure is just presented here because it comes from the previous financial. Actually, it's on loan or by council through the processes of National Treasury. We may not remove it. But the irregular expenditure in the main of 7 million was in relation to the forensic investigation that we had undertaken in respect of our former registrar. We all aware that there was a matter that in relation to our former registrar. And the 983 that you see this day is in terms of a contract, an audit, internal audit contract that we entered into for 3 years that started in about 2013. This is the last year of this internal audit service. So we were found to have incurred an irregular expenditure in 2013 because we awarded a tender to an outfit, a BEE outfit, as opposed to Deloitte and PwC. I think I've explained this also in the past. So this is the last year of this contract, and in actual fact, the contract expires now in October. So we'll not have this irregular expenditure related to the internal audit services going forward. Because just because it was for a period of 3 years, and this is the last year that we need to disclose as an irregular expenditure as per our agreement with the Auditor General. Thank you very much, Chair. I'm now going to hand over to my colleagues to present on the industry performance. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and members of this committee. In my presentation, I will cover the following. First of all, the demographic information. Secondly, the utilization statistics. Then followed by the cost of the PMBs. And then we also, for the first time, collect data on active providers for 2015 by discipline in the private medical scheme industry. What I mean by active? Providers who claimed in 2015. Now this graph shows us the number of schemes over time, and one can notice the decrease in the number of schemes from 2000 to 2015. But from 2014 to 2015, there was no change. At the end of 2015, we had 83 medical schemes, of whom 60 were restricted medical schemes, for example, your SasolMed and your GEMS, and 23 open medical schemes, for example, the BestMed and the Discoveries. Back, as I said, back in 2000, we had 144 schemes, And this downward trend is actually a consolidation amongst the small-sized restricted medical schemes. The next slide is basically the trend in the membership. Although there was a decreasing trend in the number of schemes, there was an increase in the membership with the introduction of GEMS around 2005-2006. And the end of 2015, the membership is almost flat at 8.81 million beneficiaries. In fact, we had slight negative growth of 0.06% from 2014 to 2015. And that negative growth was actually a result of a decline in membership amongst the restricted medical schemes. At the end of 2015, we had 4.94 million beneficiaries on open schemes compared to the 3.87 on restricted medical schemes. Now, if we combine membership with the number of schemes, one can see, again, the decrease in the number of schemes and then the increase in the number of beneficiaries over time. And the consolidation over time in the number of schemes was actually good for a strengthening of the risk pools of the medical schemes. So it was just a matter of time before we had negative growth. And the reason for that is most probably affordability and the slow economic growth in South Africa. If you look at the red bars, that is the restricted scheme growth from 2005 to 2015, and one can see the red for 2015, we had negative growth of minus 1.1% for the restricted medical schemes compared to positive growth, the blue line, for the open medical schemes of 0.79%. Now, if we look at the trends in membership, there were schemes where there was a growth in the membership. For example, World Truth, we also see Discovery at growth of 2.2%. And then there was also a decline in membership. AssureMed is a very small scheme. They had a decline of 74% in their membership. And GEMS also had a decline in the membership of, I think it is 3.1%. On the screen. The following slide is the age over time, and we notice a small increase in the average age from year to year or even over time. Back in 2005, the average age of the beneficiaries was 31.7 years compared to 32.3 years in 2015. Just note that the healthcare cost is not constant over the 19 age bands. And I will get back to that. So at the end of 2015, the average age is 32.3 years. And if we remove GEMS and Discovery from the restricted pool and from the open pool, we can see there's a slight increase in the average age for a restricted and open schemes because the average age of GEMS and Discovery is lower compared to the other schemes within the restricted pool and in the open scheme environment. The following slide, one can look at the proportion of beneficiaries by age band. So we have the 19 age bands on the x-axis, and then the proportion of beneficiaries on the y-axis. So this is a comparison of the proportion of beneficiaries 2005 compared with 2015. And one can see that in the older age bands, the orange bars are for 2015 and the blue bars are for 2005. And for the orange bars are in the older age bands are much higher compared to the blue bars. That is basically a shift in the age distribution over the 19 years. Although the average age only went up from 31.7 to 32.3, it was a change in the age distribution from 2005 and 2015. And that change actually contributed to approximately 9% of an increase in the healthcare costs from 2005 to 2015. So that a change in the age distribution from year to year is almost 1%. And and obviously that will have a significant impact on the cost of healthcare, and it is a bigger problem for our open medical schemes compared to the restricted medical schemes, because there's much more movement of beneficiaries in our open medical scheme environment compared to the restricted medical schemes in total. So now if we can look at the benefits paid, the total healthcare benefits paid was 138.6 billion in 2015 compared to the 127.2 billion in 2014. In total, that's an increase of 9%. And if we calculate it per average beneficiary per annum, it's also an increase of 9% from year to year. So for 2015, the average beneficiary claimed 15,822 rand for the year of 2015 compared to the previous amount of 14,511 rand. That's a total benefit. Now if you look at the risk benefits, increase also almost 9%. For 2015, the total risk amount paid was 124.6 billion compared to the 114.8 billion in 2014. And then just the benefits paid from the savings, I just swapped the years here. In 2015, 14 billion rand was paid from the savings account of members. Now the next slide is the proportional distribution by discipline, and one can see that hospitals, after 138.6 billion, the hospitals received 37.1% of that 138.6 billion, followed by medicines of 16.1%, and then if we combine all the specialist groups, the specialists received 23.5%. If we recalculate this only for a risk benefit, you will see that the hospitals actually receive 41.1% of all risk benefits paid out. So the different specialist categories, one can see this, the nephesis, they received 2.1%, followed by pathology 5.3% and radiology 4.3%. Now that the first three disciplines, they are all support specialists and are to a large extent depend on the activity of the medical and surgical specialists that receive 6.6% and 5.2% in 2015. Prevalence is obvious also a cost driver in the industry. We've noticed for almost all chronic conditions an increase in the prevalence over time. And very similar to 2015, the top five prevalence conditions is hypertension, followed by hyperlipidemia, diabetes type 2, asthma, and HIV. And then if you look at all beneficiaries, the 8.8 million beneficiaries, 20% of that 8.8 million beneficiaries were registered on at least one chronic program in 2015. The following slide is basically the increase, the percentage increase per beneficiary per annum per discipline. Just know that that first discipline in medical technology, only less than 1% of benefits were paid out for medical technology, but there was a significant increase from year to year per average beneficiary of more than 40%. But one can see that hospitals, the increase for hospitals is also higher than the industry average of 9%. The hospital increase from year to year per average beneficiary was 9.3% compared to the GPs of only 5.5% from year to year. The next slide is a very interesting slide, and that is the cost per visit, the total benefits paid per visit. So if you went to a GP in 2015, a visit to a GP would have costed you 345.53 rand. And then if the GP sent you for a set of blood tests, the visit to the lab would have cost you 697.55 rand. The nephesis one is the most expensive in terms of a visit, but just note that a nephesis might receive less than 3% of all benefits paid out, and there's a lot of variation in those events or visits to the Nephesis and in terms of the time in theater? Now, if you look at the utilization of healthcare services, we can look at the inpatient admissions for medical cases. Now, the inpatient admissions for medical cases, the average length of stay for medical cases was 4.89 days for 2015, compared to the 3.96 days for surgical cases. And then in overall, for inpatient admissions longer than 24 hours, the average length of stay was 4.51. The comparison between 2014 and 15 is there's actually very little difference between 2014 and 15. But we expect that this picture is most probably going to change if we compare 2016 with 2015. The 188, that is the admission rate per 1,000 beneficiaries. So if you had 1,000 beneficiaries, approximately 190 of the 1,000 would have ended up in hospital for longer than 24 hours. So the next slide, we look at the technology, medical technology. And we compare CT scans per 1,000, MRI scans per 1,000, and interesting, there was an increase in the utilization of technology 2015 compared to 2014. The CT scans, we had 42 CT scans per 1,000 beneficiaries in 2015 compared to the 39.74 per 1,000 in 2014. MRI scans 24.28 in 2015 compared to the 22.49 back in 2014. You can find more detail on the utilization statistics in Annexure E. The following slide is basically the cost of the PMBs in 2015. The actual cost per beneficiary per month was 608 rand per beneficiary per month, compared to the previous amount of 556 rand in 2014. So there was an increase on the PMBs of 9.4% from 2014 to 2015. Proportionally, 52% of all risk benefits paid are paid out for the PMBs. So on top of the PMBs, there's still 48% of benefits paid out of the risk pool by schemes that are non-PMBs. We also again notice significant variation in the cost of the PMBs if we compare the PMBs over the different schemes. On the left-hand side is the per beneficiary per month cost, that is the cost of the PMBs. The solid yellow line, the straight line, is the industry average, the 608 rand. And then all the different bars are the cost per scheme. The blue bars are the cost for the open schemes, and the green bars the cost for the restricted schemes. And one can see there's a significant variation in the risk profiles, in the PMB cost, because of the difference in the risk profiles amongst medical schemes. And then there's also medical schemes where the PMB cost is below 100 rand, and those schemes we will ask the accreditation and the compliance unit to investigate to make sure what is going on there. The following slide is another one on the cost of the PMBs for 2015. On the left-hand side, the axis on the left-hand side for the lines and the axis on the right-hand side for the bars. Now the bars on the right-hand side, the green and blue bars, are for the 2 years of 2014 and 15, and on the left-hand side it is a cost. And one can see the difference in the cost from age band to age band. In the older age band, the cost of the PMBs is very expensive, in fact more than 2,500 rand for a beneficiary in the age band 80 to 84, compared to a very low cost below 100 rand for beneficiaries in the age bands 5 to 9, 10 to 14 and so forth. So around 45 years, there's a break. Beneficiaries older than actually 44 years, the average cost of the PMBs is higher than the industry cost of 608 rand per beneficiary per month. So what the schemes are battling with is an aging profile or a change in the age distribution of beneficiaries when they have more beneficiaries in the older age bands, then obviously that will push up the cost of the PMBs. As I said right in the beginning, there was also for the first time we collect data on active providers in the industry. It is one thing to say we have 12,000 general practitioners in South Africa, but it is another question to answer how many of those 12,000 are actually still in South Africa and is working in South Africa. So we've asked schemes for data for all providers by discipline who actually claimed in 2015. So that data is now available, and hopefully the quality will also improve over time, but that is something that we can also share with the Department of Health going forward for the planning of the NHI. Now this slide, one can see most of the beneficiaries, 44.8% are supplementary and allied health workers, followed by the general practitioners of 22.6%. I'm just going to show you one or two disciplines. This graph, the blue bars are the speech therapists by province, and the orange bar is the percentage of beneficiaries by province. So if you compare the bars for Gauteng, for example, you will see proportionally over the 8.8 million beneficiaries, approximately 39-40% of beneficiaries are in Gauteng. And then if you look at all the speech therapists and audiologists, 50.9% of them practice also in Gauteng. So, and you, that trend you will find in most of the disciplines where there's actually, to a certain extent, an oversupply of providers in Gauteng and in the Western Cape compared to other provinces. Honourable Chair, this is a high-level summary of utilisation statistics. There's much more information available in the annual report and in the annexes, and we will also during the year going forward publish a more detailed report on the utilisation statistics. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. I will be taking you through the financial performance of medical schools. So just to have a look at how schemes fared in 2015. And on the slide now is the various areas of my presentation that I will cover. Just to clarify, the financial period of medical schemes differs from that of the CMS. The benefit year of medical schemes runs from the 1st of January to end of the year, compared to CMS, like all 3A entities, which runs from 1st of April to the 31st of March. So there will always be a reporting lag between the annual report of the CMS and that of medical schemes, which is why medical schemes data is always a year behind. I'm just clarifying so that if I speak of 2015, you understand the context here.
Sorry for that. I hope we've picked that up. Remember in our first, when they first came to make the presentation in 2014, we threw tantrums and were assisted by Dr. Pillay. I think now we have understood. I just want to make members to to be aware of that. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. On the slide, it's just an indication of how much medical schemes contributed and how much they paid out. In 2015, there was a total of 151.6 billion that was collected in contributions, representing an increase of 8.1 from the previous year. And if you strip out, if you remove savings from that figure, it leaves you with an amount of 186.7 billion. Total claims incurred were 138.9 billion. And it's important to clarify at this point that if one tries to look at the 2014 number in our annual report versus what's reported here, it will not be comparable because of a reclassification of accredited managed care services. So all of what is defined as managed care services in terms of the Act is now sitting in claims. Previously, an element of it was sitting in non-healthcare expenditure, so which is why I've marked that figure with asterisks just to distinguish that if you try and compare year on year, you won't necessarily be able to get to the same figure. On a per life level, these figures translate to about one each life covered paid 1,440 compared to claims of 1,319 per life that were paid out. The next slide shows overall trends in contributions. These numbers have been adjusted for inflation. So in 2000, each life covered was paying 880.7 rand compared to 1,439.80 cents that was paid in 2015. We'll go more into detail in terms of what are some of the factors contributing to these type of increases. Similarly, this shows the trend in gross claims, so meaning inclusive of savings. The 2000 figure was 786 rand compared to 1,319 in 2015. And there are various factors to consider which may have contributed to this trend, such as the changing benefit design, changing utilization. As Anton indicated, the change in age distribution, and all of those factors together have impacted on how medical schemes have over time adjusted their benefits and contributions. This slide speaks to the relationship between contributions and claims, referred to as the claims ratio. It tracks the claims ratio over 15 years. In the initial years, from 2000 to about 2004, those were the blue line represents the risk claims ratio. So the decrease there is at the time when medical schemes needed to build reserves, potentially at the expense of claims, which is why one sees a downward trend in claims in the initial years. In 2004, apologies, my pointer is letting me down. In 2004, there's an increase, a changing trend again in claims ratio, and that's because, firstly, there were a couple of events, the amendments to the PMBs and CDLs, which had the resultant impact on claims ratio, as well as the deregulation of prices by the Competition Commission. The focus area, again, is the last 2 years, 2014 and 2015, where overall there was an increased claims experience for all medical schemes, resulting in the higher 91.4% in claims ratios reported in this year. This graph shows the claims trends per month, and what in 2015, what one sees is that in the initial years, in the initial months, one will see, for example, from January up until March, one will see a general increase in the claims ratio, and that's the period during which members are accessing new benefits for the year. In the middle, there's a peak, and that's around the winter months, and then a tapering off in the last month of the year, obviously as benefits get depleted and when actually there's actually no specialists to actually perform procedures, so there's generally lower utilization. And the trend between open and restricted schemes is generally the same. It follows those three broad trends. This slide shows the trends in gross non-health expenditure over time. Overall, in real terms, non-health expenditure has decreased. However, in the last 2 years, as I indicated, that drop in 2014 and 15 is also artificially impacted by the reclassification of managed care that I referred to. So it's managed care, some of it has gone out of non-health care expenditure into claims, which is why one sees that drop there. So that explains the drop there. But overall, after stripping out inflation, it has come down. This slide shows the 10 schemes with the highest expenditure on trustee remuneration. So although non-health care expenditure has come down, there are various elements of it that have come under the radar recently, and one of them is the trustee remuneration. So it shows here that the different areas for which trustees were paid money for. And in about a year or so, the Council for Medical Schemes undertook work to try and research, to try and determine what would be an appropriate level of remuneration. Phase one of that project has completed, and the recommendation coming out of there is that there actually needs to be a more explicit power in the regulation to empower the registrar to be able to determine what is the appropriate level of trustee remuneration, what is excessive and what isn't. So that regulation is Regulation 6A, and there's work currently underway to further define that. This slide shows principal officer remuneration of the 10 highest schemes in 2015. We've also juxtaposed it with average lives. Once again, it's an area of non-health care expenditure that is increasing. And what one can see from that graph is that there isn't necessarily a relationship between the level at which a principal officer is remunerated and the size and potentially complexity of a medical scheme. This slide shows the spend by medical schemes, marketing, advertising, and broker costs. So all of the monies that schemes spend on recruiting new members. The red line shows net member growth, so all the new members that are coming in. Once again, even though there's generally a lag between marketing, advertising, the recruitment type spend and actual growth, one would hope that over time there's a positive relationship between the two. And what one can see is that the amount of spend is also not necessarily, doesn't necessarily have a positive relationship with member growth. Trend in overall trends in non-health care expenditure, about a total of about $11 billion was spent on overall non-health care expenditure. And non-health care expenditure refers to all of the expenditure that's not related to claims. The largest component of it is still gross admin expenditure, which includes things like that I've alluded to, principal officer fees, trustee fees, and any other operational costs, as well as broker costs, which are costs for recruiting members. So once more, one can see that over time, these costs have come down. Although there are individual schemes that we are continuing to engage with that have specific areas of concern in as far as non-health care expenditure is concerned. This slide shows the results of medical schemes. The bottom blue line, the light blue line, is the results from operations. So before you add investment income, the difference between the dark blue line and the light blue line is investment income. So the blue line is just clean operations. And in total, in 2015, schemes 1.2 billion rand. I'll speak more as to some of the reasons why we saw that kind of performance, but one of which is the higher claims experience that I've already alluded to. On this slide, it shows the top five schemes in terms of the actual quantum of losses and the actual quantum of gains, only at an operational level, so before investment income. And what one can see from that graph is that Discovery made the largest profit of just over half a billion rand, and Bonitas made the biggest loss in terms of operational results. The five schemes at the bottom and low down to Bonitas together contributed about 1.1 billion rand of the total 1.2 billion rand in terms of the net deficit that I alluded to. And the schemes that made a profit contributed about 833 million rand. The commonality between those schemes that are making profits is that all of them are above 25%, are no longer pricing for reserve building. On this slide is the schemes that made the largest deficits in terms of operational results, so before you add investment income, and the schemes that made the largest operating profits. So the green, the five schemes, DHMS, SOMOMED, LA Health, Umvuzo, Genesis, are the schemes that, in terms of rand, the rand amount, made the largest operating profits. And then the other ones made the largest operating deficits. So Discovery, of the total industry, is the one scheme that made the largest operating profits at over half a billion, just over half a billion rand. And Bonitas made the largest operating loss at about 490-something million, about half a billion deficit, the opposite direction. And what I'm saying, Chairperson, as well, is that the scheme that made losses collectively, the five schemes out of a total of 83, contributed 1.1, about 90% of the total deficit, operating deficit. So five out of 83 contributed 1.1 billion in losses. And the ones that made a profit contribute 833 million. Can I move on, Chair? Is it okay? Okay. And there's a couple of reasons why schemes, Anton has already alluded to some schemes growing, because as schemes grow, members are not bringing reserves with them, and that has a dilutory effect on the reserves of medical scheme. Changing age profile, risk profile also has an impact on claims, and that collectively can impact on the performance of medical schemes, which is why, for example, schemes like Transmed with an aging profile continues to struggle with its performance. And Bonitas had claims that were higher than expected in 2015. This slide shows the overall solvency of medical schemes. The green area is what's prescribed, which is in the regulations, which is 25% of contributions. The blue line is the overall average for open schemes, which is currently sitting at 29.2%. And restricted schemes are sitting at 37.5%. Overall schemes are at 32%. This slide should also be understood in the context that once schemes attain solvency, you no longer need to price for reserving, and essentially schemes are just maintaining reserves, which is why one would sort of see that decline over and above the other factors that I've mentioned, you know, applicable to individual schemes, such as increased claims experience. But overall, the industry is still above the required minimum solvency requirement. This slide shows, it's just to give a sense of the impact of the two largest schemes, GEMS being the largest restricted schemes and Discovery being the largest scheme and the largest open scheme, and that obviously because of their size and their continued growth, if one removes them from the industry numbers, it would be a lot higher. For example, restricted schemes would be sitting at a solvency of 60% if you remove GEMS, the effect of GEMS, and open schemes would be sitting at a solvency level of 33.1% after stripping out Discovery. The next couple of slides speak to how we approach financial supervision at the Council for Medical Schemes. The Medical Schemes Act has a very specific requirements in terms of how schemes need to maintain their position. It requires them to be financially sound at all times. Regulation 29 stipulates the minimum required accumulated funds to be kept by medical schemes. Regulation 29.3 speaks to what happens when a scheme is newly registered, in that it allows phase insolvency level until 25% is attained. Regulation 29.4 speaks to if the medical scheme has been operating for more than 5% and drops below 25%, what is the cause of action that that medical scheme needs to follow? The medical scheme needs to notify the registrar of its cause of failure, nature of and cause of failure, and basically how the what corrective actions are going to be implemented. And the registrar can then adopt the cause of action or even direct further modification of what we refer to as a business plan. This gives a diagrammatic depiction of what I've just referred to. At the bottom there is baseline supervision, so meaning all of the schemes that are registered are basically subjected to this level of supervision, where they will submit different types of statutory returns, and we will analyze that and engage with them. Once a scheme is below 25% solvency, then over and above the baseline supervision, the scheme is required to submit a business plan, monthly management accounts, and then the CMS will meet with the Board of Trustees of the medical schemes on a periodic basis. And then we also have another grouping of schemes that are on monitoring, and this is not in terms of the Act. So these are schemes that are above 25% but have different challenges, such as schemes that are under curatorship, schemes that have maybe a non-healthcare issue but not necessarily an overall solvency problem. And those schemes, too, will have a set of actions that are applied to them. So we've got three levels of supervision that are applicable depending on where the scheme fits in. And in supervising schemes, one has to balance the issues of access and growth of medical schemes and how to maintain viable risk pools, how to make sure that medical schemes remain affordable, and the overall impact on the sustainability of medical schemes. This slide speaks to schemes that are above solvency, below solvency, split by open and restricted schemes. So in 2015, there were seven medical schemes. The green bar represents 2015. The blue bars represent 2014. So in 2015, there were seven medical schemes on closed monitoring, four of which were open, three of which were restricted. The four open schemes that were on closed monitoring, meaning below 25%, represented about 4% of total beneficiaries of open schemes. Now, on the restricted scheme side, because GEMS is the largest restricted scheme and GEMS is below solvency, the total number of beneficiaries, meaning lives covered, that are in schemes below solvency was just over 50% of total restricted beneficiaries, because GEMS is the largest restricted scheme. the next couple of slides deal specifically with GEMS, also because it has been in the media, Chairperson, so we thought we should explain what is happening with GEMS. Like I indicated, it is the largest restricted scheme with over 1.5 million lives covered. And it started operating in 2006. It was intended, as you would know, Chairperson, for public service employees. And there are a couple of factors that have impacted on the performance of GEMS as we see it now. Firstly, GEMS has grown exponentially since it started operating in 2006. And as new members join the scheme, they come from different schemes. Some of them have previously not been covered, and they're not bringing reserves with them. And so that immediately has a dilutory effect on how solvency is calculated. So that will immediately have a negative impact on solvency. It will dilute reserves. The second issue is that GEMS, since inception, has never had any underwriting, so no waiting period, no late joiner period, no late joiner penalties. And again, that was to support the objective of facilitating access for public service employees. Over the last couple of years, GEMS has been able to absorb the cost of not having underwriting. But in the last 2 years, this has cost the scheme in the region of about $300 to $500 million a year. Then the second issue is that there's also been, and resulting, there's also been a lot of anti-selective behavior by members. For example, in 2015, there was a group of about 8,000 members that joined the scheme. Together, they contributed about $30 million, but claimed about 150-160 million rand. Meaning, and this is because there's no underwriting, so many people join when they need specific procedures, have them done, and then they go, they leave the scheme. So that too has cost the scheme. And then there's also been elements of waste and abuse of benefits by both members and providers. And then in 2016 in particular, there's been a deterioration in claims experience, particularly in hospital costs, which the scheme has estimated to be in the region of about, again, over $500 million per annum. So collectively, these elements have had an impact, a negative impact on the scheme. As I indicated, there's been an increased utilization of benefits, particularly higher admission rates and increased length of stay, which collectively have impacted on the scheme. Also, in 2012, the scheme took on a group of pensioners from another scheme because of arrangements that had been made as part of the Public Service Bargaining Council. So the scheme took on that group of about 16,000 members, and National Treasury partially funded the intake of those members, but not fully. So that, too, also had an impact on the scheme. So if one looks at the different elements, those collectively have had an impact on the scheme. One of the... The point that I was making, Chairperson, is that because the scheme does not apply any underwriting like other medical schemes, so typically when you join a medical scheme, you'll have a condition-specific waiting period or a late journal penalty. So GEMS has absolutely, well, up until October, had no underwriting at all. So what it meant is that you could not join the scheme all this time and only join when you have a specific need, typically when you require an expensive procedure or when you are pregnant and are needing care. So when you join the scheme, you pay your contribution. You're not subjected to any waiting period, so meaning you claim like members that have already been on the scheme. So the example that I was making is that there was a group of about 8,000 members in terms of the schemes analysis that joined the scheme in 2015 at different points. Those members together contributed about 30 million rand, but claimed about five times of that, about 150 million rand, because there is no waiting period, there's no underwriting. So they have the same access to benefits as members that have already been on the scheme for a long time. And that is estimated to cost the scheme, again, in the region of about 300 million to 500 million per annum. On the slide, it just shows some of the remedial measures that the scheme has implemented. As of the 1st of October, the scheme has introduced some underwriting on different categories of members. They are also introducing more stricter managed care interventions, things like more stricter pre-authorization measures, more frequent tracking of claims, and more frequent claims reviews. The scheme has also appointed case managers to have a look at what's actually driving admissions and whether people are indeed being admitted for the things that they need to be admitted for. One of the things that the scheme, one of the problems that it had also is that it had a very broad definition of dependence in comparison to other schemes. So typically on GEMS versus other schemes, any person who's financially dependent on the member would have been able to join the scheme, whereas in another scheme there were more stringent measures applicable. So collectively, these factors, Chairperson, are what have had an impact on the performance of GEMS. But with these remedial measures introduced, GEMS should begin to improve its performance. This slide, Chair, I think the point that I want to make here is that the GEMS issue should also be understood in terms of what a going concern is versus the solvency requirement. So a going concern is a business that will continue to operate into the foreseeable future, meaning there is no need to liquidate or curtail its operations into the near future. So that's what broadly the definition of a going concern. So whether GEMS is a going concern, yes, GEMS is a going concern. It's got a positive net asset value. GEMS has sufficient asset to liability coverage. It is below the solvency requirement of 25%, but the Office of the Registrar continues to monitor GEMS, and we meet with the Board of Trustees on a regular basis, and the scheme continues to submit progress reports to the Office of the Registrar. And these are what we would track the performance of, used to track the performance of the medical scheme. This slide speaks to broadly how the monies that are in medical schemes are invested. Overall, both open and restricted schemes have most of their money in cash and near cash assets. And that's obviously because to meet their liquidity requirements, given the short-term nature of medical scheme obligations. And also, Board of Trustees just need to make sure that these are sufficiently diversified to manage the risk. So the biggest difference between open schemes and restricted schemes is that restricted schemes hold more equity, obviously because they have higher reserves and they can take a little bit more risk than open schemes can. My last slide, this just shows the market in terms of beneficiaries covered and the administrators, the third-party administrators. There are about five top five administrators in the market, Discovery, which holds the largest share, and together these administrators are responsible for over 80% of beneficiaries covered. And that concludes my presentation. Thank you.
Okay. The last presenter. It's quite two more. It's quite a long and a very high level technical presentation, which is also going to, I will comment about that. Can two more?
Sorry, Chairperson. I think that two that are short presentations, both the legal and this, I think, is an important one, because in the interest of beneficiaries, they have complaints about and how we handle them. It is something that also came out in the market inquiry.
No, the reason that we are, I'm a bit concerned, other logistics that are going to be affected, but also that we will be doing justice, because we are worried about logistical problems. I'll comment about some other things that I've conducted. So I'd appreciate if we can, because it's really eating into the time, the access. Questions and the response and whatever. Okay.
Thank you, Chair, and the members of the committee. I'll just be brief considering the time constraints. I'll touch on the volume of complaints as well as the resolution rate, the topical complaints that we've received as the Council for Medical Schemes. Basically, what I'll highlight is what members of medical schemes have been complaining mostly about. And then I'll also do a comparative analysis between the performance of both open medical schemes as well as restricted medical schemes. And basically, in the complaints unit, we provide an early warning system just to inform the services that will be rendered by other units. For example, if we see in the complaints unit that there's particular trends that relate to the roles of a medical scheme, we make sure that we escalate those matters to the benefits management unit to ensure that those roles that we find to be in contravention of the medical schemes actually be amended, as well as referring other matters which need the attention of the compliance unit for further enforcement. This slide talks to the volume of complaints that we've received in 2015. You'll note that we've received 5,089 complaints, which was an increase of about 12% compared to the previous number of complaints, which was 3,876. What we've done a classification as to what are the issues that were raised by members. You see that we've got a classification of valid as well as invalid complaints as well as inquiries. That pie chart talks to the actual percentage in respect of those two categories. So in terms of the resolution, we made sure that we resolved 5,794 complaints. Next slide talks to the performance of open medical schemes. You see in the first two schemes, we've got SpectraMed resolution, which was an increase of complaints in respect of those schemes, and the issues that were raised by members were of concern to the organization, because we see that there were a lot of administrative issues relating to those complaints. On SpectraMed and resolution, we've noted that there were administrative inefficiencies which led to members' accounts not processed correctly. Some of the accounts were paid from incorrect category. So what you've done, because the accounts were not paid correctly, it meant that members had to be paid the balance of the claims from their pocket. So with our intervention, we made sure that the medical scheme reprocessed those accounts and pay them from the correct benefit. And the last issue that you've noted in respect of that was the contravention of Regulation 8.1, where medical schemes were supposed to fund prescribed minimum benefit accounts from the risk pool. That is, they need to fund them in full, but you find those two medical schemes paying them a scheme rate, leaving the balance for the members. The next scheme is Genesis, or it has cut the name up there. which is the third scheme that we've received members from those medical schemes. This one talks to the incorrect application of the Medical Schemes Act. What happened there, you find that the medical schemes misinterpreted Regulation 8.1. What that meant, it meant that instead of the medical scheme paying the claims in full, as prescribed by the legislation, they'll short pay those accounts and expect members to pay the difference, which means that the members were exposed financially because whatever that the medical scheme was supposed to pay in terms of the legislation, but they didn't do that. So we've seen an increase on complaints relating to that, and that the medical scheme came up with various reasons as to why they wouldn't fund those accounts as per the legislation. They'll come up with reasons which are in the slides, which I've just picked up three of them. We know that PMPs are diagnosis-driven. It doesn't matter when you are diagnosed with that particular condition. What is important is that if you need services relating to a PMP, the medical scheme needs to fund that. Some of the conditions, we know that you don't need to be hospitalized for them. For example, diabetes, asthma, hypertension, which are PMPs, you can get services if you go to the doctor. But they'll decline funding that account, saying that because you're not hospitalized, they have no obligation to fund those claims. Other instances say that if you went to a private hospital, they wouldn't fund it. They expect all members of Genesis to go to the public hospital to access PMPs. And the legislation is clear. They needed to fund those claims. Okay, there's no zero payment in terms of what the PMP stipulates. The last issue relating to Genesis, which was a serious non-compliance with the Medical Schemes Act, again related to the funding of PMPs. There was a particular complaint which started at the Complaints Adjudications Unit, which again there was a contravention saying that they couldn't fund this member's claim because she went to a private hospital and she needed ongoing treatment in respect of those injuries which are listed as PMPs. So we ruled against the medical scheme, they appealed appeals committee. The matter went as far as Supreme Court of Appeal, where the court confirmed the decision that we've made as the complaints unit that the scheme was supposed to fund that particular account. So it will be touched on briefly by Chris because all the expenses that we had to pay in order to ensure that you protect members from financial catastrophe. This slide talks to the trends that you've noted where, again, there was a contravention of Regulation 10.6, which specifically indicates that PMPs shouldn't be funded from the member savings account. So what we've done in respect of those complaints, because we've seen that there are many of them, we've seen that this matter should be escalated to our compliance unit for further handling, just for the office to take appropriate action, because as an early warning system, you don't just need to resolve a complaint. There must be corrective action that is taken by the regulator. And we saw that there were also no reasonable measures in the medical scheme in terms of assessment of claims that they need to flag PMP accounts. They either failed to do that or there were deliberate policies by medical scheme just to circumvent that particular provision, that is Regulation 10.6. The next category that we've also observed an increase in the number of complaints talks to general customer service. So the complaints that you've received related to these bullet points that I've highlighted, which talks to how the medical schemes were treating members, either when they've written to them or when they've called the medical scheme to get assistance, you find that there were no service that is rendered to those members. Lastly, in terms of open medical schemes, we're talking about the conduct of medical doctors who failed to discuss the cost prior to them rendering services to members. They basically misinterpreted the provisions of PMPs, telling members, that is the patients, that the medical schemes are supposed to fund the bill of the account in full, instead of disclosing that they are not designated service providers of the medical scheme, because Regulation 8.3 is clear that if the members go to a designated service provider, medical scheme is supposed to fund those accounts in full, just as a risk mitigation measure that is taken by all medical schemes. So they failed those members. So they came to us claiming that the medical schemes were supposed to pay certain accounts, but they failed to do that. So we rule against the doctors, especially when we saw that there were no DSP and they were informed prior to that that there were no DSP. Therefore, that difference was not liable to be funded by medical schemes. In respect of restricted medical schemes, there were no major issues that you've noted as a complaints medical scheme in respect of their performance compared to the open medical schemes, except for GEMS. You see, GEMS occupies the 10th space. we've never received a high volume of complaints against GEMS except last year. What we've noted there is that there were three issues that were raised by members related to services related to medicine, pathology, as well as radiology accounts, which were not funded at all. There were delays, which were inordinate in respect of the service provider that was contracted with GEMS, which is called MyCare, Helios JV at the time. That contract related to those three particular services, but instead of them performing in terms of the service level agreement that they had with GEMS, but they failed in respect of that. So we saw a spike in terms of the complaints relating to those three particular services. But what GEMS did, they were open about the issue. We contacted the Board of Trustees. They were open with the matter. What they've done, they've seen that that particular entity is failing the members of GEMS, even the scheme itself, because they've contracted, they've been paying them, but they're not getting services at the end of the day. But at some point, they decided to terminate the contract, which was beneficial. They moved those to another entity, which is the administrator, which is MedScheme. After moving to MedScheme, then we also monitored the progress in terms of the payment of those claims. Then GEMS was able to turn the situation around because MedScheme made sure that they've cleaned the process in respect of that. So there was ongoing monitoring from the complaints unit, and then we're happy that we're able to solve that particular problem. And I think I've tried to rush it through. That concludes my presentation.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members of the Committee. I think my colleague has very eloquently dealt with a number of the issues, and I shall be brief. I'm aware of the time constraints. Just really an overview for the Honourable Members of the Committee to show you the areas in which there's been a lot of activity, the activity at the office in protecting the members of medical schemes who really sit in the centre of what we do. The first one, the important one in terms of our activity in important tribunals, external tribunals, that is, we have two of our own within the CMS, but the very, very important matter of an issue that we've referred to the Competition Commission, and we're now before the Competition Tribunal, regarding the issue of price fixing and the extent to which medical service providers collude very often in setting prices, and this particular issue concerns SAMA, specifically, and there are a number of other entities, the Pediatric Society, the Cardiothoracic Society as well. And what we've really done is to refer the issue to the tribunal, and we're busy at this point in arguing the particular case. We were first denied access. They said that counsel couldn't actually of its own bring a case before the tribunal. We took that to Competition Appeal Court, and that matter was ruled in our favor, and we're now in the process of actually sorting out what is a critically important matter because it goes to costs and the factors that drive costs in the medical scheme environment. The appeal board, a number of matters, of course, very active tribunal within the council, is an internal tribunal, as is the appeals committee, and just important just to flag the sorts of issues, Honourable Chair, that really serve there. This particular one concerns a drug called Humira, which was an expensive drug. And in terms of the provisions of Regulation 15IC, of course, if a particular drug is found to be ineffective or inefficient, doesn't work, then the particular scheme is obliged to actually allow the funding of an alternate drug, provided, of course, it's evidence-based and all the other requirements are met, which work. And so we've done so in that particular case as well. That was successfully argued on behalf of the member. Then just on GEMS versus the case of M, this is a case very, very briefly of a pharmacist. He's a dependent member on a particular, on the GEMS medical scheme, and in terms of his pharmaceutical practice, a dispute developed between him and the scheme, which alleged that he had submitted certain fraudulent claims. The scheme then sought to impute that, his criminal liability, alleged criminal liability,
to his membership, and they terminated him as a member. We said you can't do that. The two are separate issues. If he misbehaves and his misconduct as a member in terms of what the Act provides, and that's dealt with on that level, and then the other issues as a service provider separate and distinct from that, and in fact we ended up in the High Court eventually with this case because we pursued it, and the High Court, per Judge Bakwa, ruled in our favour. So we were able to protect the member in that specific instance. Then the well-publicised case of Genesis versus the Minister of Health and the Council, Genesis sought to cite the Minister of Health in an application to strike down Regulation 8, which is the regulation my colleague has referred to on prescribed minimum benefits, and they cited only the Minister and no one else. And on the day at court, a whole host of people arrived, including ourselves, because as a regulator we felt we certainly should have been cited. We asked to be cited, we applied. Genesis eventually, by agreement, conceded that, as we were, obviously, would be representative in that case of the Minister of Health, they allowed us in. Section 27 were there as well. They were allowed in as a friend of the court. And the Honourable Chair, there were a range of other parties. People living with cancer were there, represented. There was the South African Private Practitioners Association and a range of others. Genesis opposed their admission into the case, and the court held that they were entitled to be admitted, and the matter was then appealed by Genesis to the Supreme Court of Appeal. The Supreme Court of Appeal declined to hear the case. Genesis then sought to take that to the Constitutional Court. They were dismissed there. That court refused also to hear the matter, so of course they were then stuck with the huge number of people that were then admitted to the case, and the case was then subsequently settled, and we believe for the obvious reasons of the cost implications of that particular judgment. Then moving on to a very, very important case, Chair, and this closes the loop on our last presentation. When we last presented to you, we indicated that we successfully sought a declaratory order from the Gauteng North High Court on the right of the registrar to inspect a scheme, and that the decision to inspect such scheme was not appealable. We succeeded there. Bonitas Medical Scheme, which was the scheme, the relevant scheme here, then took us on appeal, decided it took the case on appeal, the judgment of the Supreme Court of Appeal, and the Supreme Court of Appeal in a nutshell ruled that the decision of the registrar to inspect the medical scheme is not a decision in the context of those decisions which are capable of being appealed against. Very, very important decision, Honourable Chair, because the effect of it is that the regulator now is entitled and allowed in taking those decisions to go in. If there are issues which are of concern to schemes around how the inspections are conducted, the court held that Their remedies and other solutions and means of addressing that, but the regulator cannot be prevented from actually going in. So we were pleased with the particular outcome, and I think it settled the issue now once and for all. Then the best men and the trustees versus the scheme was very, very briefly shared. It was an issue regarding the governance of this particular scheme. We had applied for a curatorship. They had lodged... the council had sought to remove these particular trustees. We also, they then resisted that. We also brought a counter application in essence for curatorship. The High Court in Pretoria, the Gauteng North High Court, dismissed both those applications. But at the end of the day, the matter was appealed to both the Supreme Court of Appeal on a petition, and both that court and the refused to hear the particular issue. So in a nutshell, Chair, briefly, we've now moved on from that, and a new board has taken over, and we found alternative means of dealing with that. Chair, I'm not going to deal with this case, but the following one in great length. It again concerns the Genesis Medical Scheme. I think my colleague has adequately dealt with it in her reference to the fact that this scheme is sought not to pay for prescribed minimum benefits, but it's a Cape-based scheme, and I think we mentioned this in the last presentation. It's very, very important, I think, because the hospitals, the public hospitals down in Cape Town have resisted members of the scheme who've been referred to them, who've arrived on their doorstep for treatment, because this particular scheme in a blanket rule, which it had, states that any prescribed minimum benefit treatment must be obtained from the public sector in a blanket fashion. That was at the time that this matter was heard. And there's been a lot of issue taken by the office, have taken serious issue with this, the registrar's office, in correspondence exchanges, but the rule had remained. And so essentially, a member that had then sought protection or treatment from a private hospital was had her payment refused by the scheme, which said you didn't go to a public hospital, what you're required to do in terms of the rules. It was a very technical debate. The scheme said because the rule still stood, that the rule trumped what the Act said in that regard. And that was argued in the Cape High Court here. The Cape High Court actually agreed with that submission in saying that until such time as the registrar forced the scheme to change the rule, that was a rule to which the members would be bound regardless of the Act. We immediately appealed that to the Supreme Court of Appeal, and we're very pleased to say today we've won that case very recently, and the Supreme Court of Appeal said, as I stated there, that in fact the rules of the scheme cannot trump the Act regardless of that situation, and that we remember, as in this case, suffered from a prescribed medical benefit condition. Genesis was obliged to pay for the treatment administered in respect thereof. And Chair, I just think briefly, very important to note for the benefit of the committee, the court had regard in making this ruling to the following. That is just a very brief note in Annexure A, which concerns the prescribed minimum benefit condition. In Annexure A, the court made reference to state that the objective of specifying a set of prescribed minimum benefits within these regulations is twofold. And I'll state the first one, which is the important one. Firstly, to avoid incidents where individuals lose their medical scheme cover in the event of serious illness and the consequent risk of unfunded utilization of public hospitals. And I think that lies at the heart of this very, very important case, because when that happens, then people are dumped essentially onto the public sector, and they've got priorities, I think, of their own, and that's also a reaction we've seen from the hospitals where members in those circumstances have arrived on their doorstep. Chair, and then just lastly on personal medical savings accounts, a very important case that we also successfully appealed from the Cape High Court, which ruled against us. We were successful in appealing that particular case where the court had held that the ownership of members' personal medical savings accounts essentially were to be accounted for in terms of the general risk pool and not to be treated any differently. They were rejected. This particular Genesis, again, was rejected on that basis by our financial supervision unit. This precipitated an appeal and a dispute, and ultimately the Cape High Court has ruled that those of trust funds, the members' personal medical savings account monies amount to trust funds. They must be treated as such, they must be accounted for as such, and then in essence really, I think, ring-fenced from the general risk pool. And that is the way that is now being dealt with. And once again, I think we've provided very important clarity on some critical issues. The matter is currently, I must note, for the benefit of the committee, honourable members, it's on appeal to the Constitutional Court, which has agreed to hear the matter. I think it's being heard on the 7th of February. We're confident of success, but one never knows with these matters. We did win the case on a basis of 3 judges in the Supreme Court of Appeal to 2. 2 judges were not with us, 3 were in favour of us. So it was, in a sense, a divided bench. But we believe, given the imperatives at stake here, that we will have a favourable hearing in the Constitutional Court. But again, I preface that with caution, as one never knows. Thank you.
No, thank you very much. It was quite a, it was quite a long and intense presentation. And I've been reminded by the Secretariat that in fact your invitation said that we will adjourn at 1900. But what has been in my mind is, as much as we may have, they are going to ask questions. I'm not saying we must not ask questions. I'm more becoming live to the fact that this is one of the most complicated entities that I have come across. In my previous deployment and in this deployment, as much as you have tried. As I was trying to speak with the secretary, he said, it's so highly technical. He said, and she was coming to a defense. They have tried to be simple, but we have not yet. So I'm raising this because I'm becoming live to the fact that it's really complicated. But it doesn't mean that we are not going to be asking questions.
there are areas where we ask questions, and after that round of questions, I will have to lobby members during break on what I think we will move forward. We are proposed. I'm happy that you have upfront spoke about, as much as spoke about, the issue of gems, what it has been in the public domain. But it's really relevant going to the other areas of the medical scheme of which we are members of, was our opening a little kind of forum. Honorable members, that is the presentation, questions, comments, clarities. Honorable Khoza, Honorable Volmik, Honorable Maisela, and then Honorable Ndaba. And that.
Thank you, Chairperson, for the opportunity. Firstly, I want to comment the highly technical presentation. You are right, Chairperson, to say it's highly technical. One of my questions is going to speak to that, the technical part of it. I think I must start by that one. Where in Ms. Paswana indicated that there are valid and invalid complaints. One would want to know as to when is the complaint valid, who determines the complaint to be valid. Technically, as you are, highly technically, what happens to those people out there who will be like myself, who would not understand your technical language? Are you able to come down to their level by explaining as to what you mean by an invalid a complaint? Because a complaint, anybody who comes with a complaint really will feel he or she has got a valid point because he has got a complaint. But, most of the people that you are servicing are those that who cannot afford lawyers, and they're doomed to what? To lose the cases. And it means their complaints were invalid. Will you please clarify to me what you mean by that? Secondly, it's a... With regard to staff reduction, I don't know when did you find or realize that there is non-performance. Was it after you had pressure to cut the staff, then now so you identified those that are non-performers? One issue I would want to check with you, does your institution have system in place to empower those non-performers? I think the issue here must not be getting rid of them if they're non-performers. We also need to ensure that we assist them so that they be able to perform to the best to their ability. One other issue I wanted to raise is with regard to page 19. You indicated it's your responsibility to strengthen and monitor the medical schemes. I wanted to check with you if you really think it's fair for beneficiaries when by half year in June, if it started to benefit in January, by June, they no longer have money. And medical schemes taking money until December. But they can't go to doctor, they can't go to hospital. Is that really fair? What is your take with regard to such things with the high level of presentation you've given us? It is a challenge. And many of those that I'm talking about
are those that are belonging to the schemes that is not off by choice, that they belong to such a scheme. So do you think it's really fair? And lastly, you indicated that the last time you had irregular expenditure was year 2014-15. I want to know from your side as to whether those who participated went through disciplinary procedures or what happened to them, those who have done that one. But you were presenting, you said it's for 2015. You never said what happened in 2016. What is the audit opinion in 2016? I never heard you talking about a clean audit. But you seem to be happy. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Thank you very much for the presentation. It was quite comprehensive. I'd like to begin with Ms. Mzia's presentation, which is very insightful. Thank you for that. But you'd mentioned, future. You'd mentioned a net deficit of 1.2 billion. So there's a net operating loss in the industry of 1.2 billion. So that's one factor. Secondly, we know that there's been a collapsing of medical aids. 144, I think, to 81, something like that, over a 15-year period. 144 to 83, so there's 61. So it's more than 40% reduction over a 15-year period. That's alarming. And then, of course, the NHI, and with that certain policy uncertainty for the medical aids industry. So you've got a perfect storm swirling around the industry. And it seems that the fallout is suffered a lot by the public, by the consumers. If you look at the escalation of premiums, now we know, of course, that medical inflation is going to outstrip CPI, but to the tune of 15% in some instances, and with very little, in many instances, increase in the benefits to those consumers. You know, one of the duties of the CMS is to protect the public in terms of their rights, in terms of medical schemes. And can we say that with such escalation, we're doing that, and if not, then what can be done? Because those communities and those households who are in the margins are being pushed over by these escalations. So that's the first. And the second thing is, so coming back to the industry, so one of the options you could give is to review the solvency rate. And I mean, it was interesting in Ms. Mavia's presentation, you had GEMS that is a going concern and yet is below the solvency rate. So that speaks volumes. So, and I know at some point there was going to be a solvency framework revision, I think with Dr. Tavilius. How far is that process? And can we see movement if it hasn't gone too far? Then with regards to just two very, very quick questions. Is it time to consider risk equalization fund? I know it was mooted many years ago, but the issues of adverse selection that benefit some medical aids are still there. And you can level the playing field by having a subsidy that will help medical aids, but obviously make it more equitable. Then also in some countries, and this is looking especially towards NHI, in some countries there are certain levels of compulsory medical aids. So employers have certain duties to ensure that the employees are on medical aids. So for example, we all have to be on PharMed, but at a macro level, you know, and that would obviously benefit the medical aid industry. And ensure that people who can afford medical aid aren't using public funds and disadvantaging to those who can't, but obviously then those consumers need to be protected, etc. So is that something that you in principle would support without going into too much detail? Then the final two questions, the 983 irregular expenditure, was there a delay in the condonation? In other words, in your application for condonation, was there a delay? If so, why? And just give us a bit more detail of that, please, what that 983 is. We are still not clear. And then the final question is, you know, we had the AG present to us yesterday. We had a shocking statistic of 7.7 billion rands worth of irregular expenditure in the health sector in South Africa. 7.7 billion rands. And one of the key findings in terms of root causes was a lack of consequences, lack of consequence management. So coming back to CMS, and I know this is a difficult issue, but what have been the consequences? We know that there's been 7.3 million rands spent on the investigation on the previous registrar. I'm still not too sure what the consequences have been. Can you please, just in simple terms, that
Thank you, Chair. The reason why you are sitting here or you are constituted was to make sure that the medical schemes comply and that you protect the victims. Because medical scheme is like a bonus scheme or like a bank. When they take your money, they are happy. When they have to pay, they have to ask you whether you comply to be paid. So so you have a very difficult task to perform. But I think you are trying, because with the amount of litigation that is there and some of them actually having deep pockets to can ruin you financially, you are doing a good job. Thanks. But then let's come to you. I think, did you ultimately manage to buy a building, or you are still renting? Looks like it's, what they call it, what expenditure? Fruitless expenditure in just paying exorbitant amount. Maybe we should investigate you whether you know the guy from whom you are renting. So anyway, it's just a caveat that maybe you should expedite getting your own building in the long run. It's cheaper. And there is a question of the former CEO and registrar, and we would like to hear what the court has said very soon, because the longer it delays, the longer it drags. Justice delayed is justice denied. So maybe if you can expedite that. What is the reason for the delay in getting approval for the condonation of 983 million? You know what I'm talking about. So maybe if you can explain why you're delaying in getting a condonation. Yep. Well, the question of bonitas have been sorted out. There is a question of gems. I don't think it was mentioned here about the salary of the CEO. It looks like you are not supposed to interfere with the remuneration of the staff or something like that. But if the victims are complaining out there that, and in their financial statement, there is something about 4 million. I'm not going to be held liable for that. I haven't yet verified, but I think in their document there is something about exorbitant remuneration of the CEO. Maybe just look into that as well. I think maybe I should leave it there.
Thanks, Chairperson. Firstly, Chair, let me welcome the presentation and the report that we got from CMS. But I think, Chair, my concern is with regards to their performance indicators, which they did not achieve. Maybe, Chair, what we need to ask them is, do they have any plan in terms of improving their performance so that they can meet their performance indicators? Chairperson. Number, the second one, Chair, if I had the acting, the CFO, with regards to the post of the registrar, if I heard you well, you said you have appointed Mr. Zobu, I'll tell you, don't tell me. Zogufa, as your registrar. But I think if it's not the one of the gentlemen who was introducing himself as the managing director of one of the healthcare boards. You know, I'm thinking. I think there was one case where Mr. Zokufa have taken you to court, where he was fighting for the minimum benefits of clients, and I'm worried, Che, that on the other hand, he is still the managing director on the healthcare board, and on the other hand, he'll be the registrar for CMS. To me, it sounds like somehow there'll be a conflict. And I'm not sure, Che, if he's going to get two salaries or he will resign from the other from the other responsibility that he has. Because, Che, if you have read their report, there was where it talks about, I'll tell you. There is one medical aid where the chairperson of the board of trustees, a tender was given to his wife. So, you know, I'm just asking myself, I'm just thinking that with regards to his appointment, is there not a conflict of interest? And then, Chairperson, with regards to the rates that are charged by some of the medical aids, have you ever reviewed the rates that the medical aids are charging us? Why am I asking this, Chair? I think in the last meeting where you were here and you were making your presentation, I have filed a complaint of Waterfall Hospital, who have charged me rates of Discovery. I have sent my complaint to the DDG, Mr. Blee, and he has submitted my complaint to yourself, and up until now I haven't received my reply. And Chairperson, you know, when I fought with the doctors, because my son had to go back to the hospital for another operation, and I kept fighting him with the regards to the rates that they are charging me, because I said, how, but logically, how do you charge me rates of Discovery when I'm not a member of Discovery, I'm using Summit? And he says to me, but if your people are not reviewing the rates, what rates must we use? We are using rates as we want, because there are no rates that have been reviewed by your medical aid scheme. So, you know, I became very worried. And even now, Chair, I was thinking that maybe, you know, today, Chairperson, you are going to tell us that maybe there's progress in terms of reviewal of rates. And with regards to complaints, I'm happy with the presentation that was made, Chairperson. But you know, there's a lady, Chairperson, called Angela. That lady is sending SMS, you know, to help clients, people who have got problems with regards to medical aid not fulfilling their obligations. And that lady is assisting a lot of people. You know, one person was advising me and to say, maybe you must take your complaint to that lady. And I refused. I said, there is no way that I will take my complaint to a lady that I don't know. When we have this entity as government. But, you know, I was afraid to tell her that, in fact, Katlegate, you are being disturbed. And, you know, I was looking at your the list of your membership trends or whatever. I see here some of them, these ones are open, but I don't see any list of those membership medical aid. And I was asking Mr. Mayor, where does Hamed fall in here? You know, because I think even in the last meeting, as members of parliament, we had a problem with a parliament. And we thought maybe you are going to assist us. But up until today, you know, we don't get the story. We are still paying 8,000. You know, myself and my two children, I'm paying 8,000 a month. And I'm not sure why you're not assisting us with this thing of permit. Because this thing there is ripping off. We are expecting you to be helping us. Sometimes we raise these questions to the department and they say, hey, maybe this thing must be taken to MPS. And I'm worried, Chairperson, because all of us, Abanya, my seller, so, because it's expensive, we can't afford it. When you talk affordability, we can't afford it. So, Chairperson, but with the other things, I think other members have raised my issues. I'm sure I'm exhausted too. Because, you know, there were many presentations. But with the progress that they have made so far, Chairperson, I think I'm but I am impressed with this improvement in some of the things that you have presented today. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. On page 51, on your presentation, you talk about hospitals. I just want to know which, how many of those. If you talk of hospitals, there are hospitals in the public sector, there are hospitals in the private sector. So if you talk about hospitals, do you include the whole, either public or private? Is PAMET, because it is restricted, and you will pardon us, some of us are not there. I'll pick up from, is it because PAMET is a restricted scheme that you can't, there's nothing that much you can do. So what is it? Well, literally restricted, it's open that anybody can be part of that. And what then becomes your responsibility in a restricted scheme versus an open scheme? How far can you go? If I can just put it in that sense. Thank you very much for being open about GEMS. But POMET, what's it? POMET. You haven't reflected on an irregular expense by a member of one of the senior executives who abused the scheme resources in terms of government. You have not. My worry is that you are picking up on GEMS, whereas there are other schemes that have also got a problem. For an example, Polmet, I think it's the police. And are you intending opening up a criminal case against the former registrar? I'll say former for now, in light of the challenges that have been there. I do think that what we'll do for now is that we are going to break
for tea, just for 10 minutes, allow you to respond on some of the questions. I will still raise my remarks. About the presentation and the institution itself and ourselves. Remember, one said your responsibility to empower us. Still saying it's quite a very challenging and difficult area. If you are to oversight an entity that is overseeing billions, and I'm not implying that we are not, we don't follow, but I will in my remarks, you have been listening to our questions, you will respond accordingly, you have made different presentations, and when you come back, you will take us through your story.